Seeing her, the damsel suddenly rose and said with folded hands, "We are your maidservants. Tell us what we can do for you." Purport. While Devahuti was thinking of what to do in that great palace in her dirty clothes, there were at once, by the yogic powers of Kardamuni, 1,000 maidservants prepared to serve her. They appeared before Devahuti within the water and presented themselves as her maidservants, simply awaiting her orders. Devahuti's life is just undergoing a great change. Previously, she was voluntarily living in a very austere and difficult condition, and now she's about to enter a new phase of life in which she's living in great opulence with many servants and a beautiful place to live and so on. But actually, in her inner life or her basic consciousness, there's no change. She wants to do everything for the pleasure of her husband. For the pleasure of her husband, she accepted a very austere life because he was living very austerely. She had some desire, she expressed that to him, and by his yoga shakti, she is now entering a phase of life which appears to be like that of a great queen. But that also, whatever opulence and beauty she is about to receive, that is simply for offering for the pleasure of her husband. She doesn't want to be a separate enjoyer. This may appear, it may appear from the description of Kardam and Devahuti that they are elevated persons compared to the ordinary people, but pious. They're pious in the sense that they want to enjoy this material world, but that cannot actually be because they are the parents in Leela of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Supreme Lord has no father or mother. He is the father and mother of everyone. But to give pleasure to his devotees and to experience pleasure himself, he takes birth and accepts various servants of his as fathers and mothers. And it may appear that they have some material desire, but we should never think like that. We should be very careful in seeing the great acharyas, great devotees, that even though it may appear that they are in many ways like materialistic people, they're not. Vaishnava charitra sarvada pavitra jaininde hingsha kare bhakati vinod nashambhase tare mona thaki mona sada thake dhari. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, whoever, the personality of a Vaishnava is always fully pure, and whoever out of spite criticizes such a person, then Bhaktivinoda says, I don't speak with such a person, I'll just remain silent, I won't have anything to do with them. So these are great personalities being described in Bhagavatam. Even the demons are great. They're not ordinary demons. The demons who are described, Kamsa, Baka, Agha, Putana, they're not little demons like we have so many in Kali Yuga. You have to be a big demon to get in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, a devotee doesn't try for name and fame, but Kamsa, Agha, Baka, they've all achieved success. They've achieved immortality. They're famous. Even after so many years have gone by, their name is associated with the Supreme Lord. Kamsari, one name of Krishna. who is the enemy of Kamsa, then Aghavit, all these similar names, connected with various demons. Lord Ram's name, Ravanari or Ravanari, two names. One means who's the enemy of Ravana, another means who's the enemies of Ravana's sons. So they've all achieved fame, but that's not a very good way to achieve it. But the point is that they're all great personalities who are described in Srimad Bhagavatam. So Karyamuni and Devahuti, they are great personalities. Anyone who's a devotee is a great person. Compared to this material world, persons who are simply interested in eating, sleeping, mating and defending, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, even those who are interested in moksha, they are great compared to others who are simply interested in dharma, artha and kama. But their position is negligible in comparison to that of a devotee. Even a neophyte devotee is in a much better position even than great famous Mayavadi sannyasis who appear to be very advanced by their knowledge of Shastra, by their renunciation. But it's all progress in the wrong direction. Whereas even a neophyte devotee hasn't made much advancement on the path of bhakti. But just the fact that he's on the path means that he's going in the right direction. So what to speak of personalities like Kardama and Devahuti? Any apparent material leanings, that can be understood to be didactic for us. That is to give us some lesson. But from our perspective, they're very great personalities. Just like we see in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there are so many great devotees, among whom Raghunath Das Goswami is famous for his vairagya, for his extreme detachment from anything even slightly resembling material happiness, even though he came from a background of tremendous material happiness. He was the son of Hiranya and Govardhan Majumdar, who were so rich, it was incomparable. And his wife was very beautiful. He was always running away from home to try to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He had no attachment to all of this. Then his mother said to his father, "Why don't you tie him up?" He said, "What's the point? There's no use tying him up. We gave him so much money and a beautiful wife, and if that can't tie him up, then nothing can tie him up. Ropes won't tie him up." So he left all that. Tyaktva turnam ashesha mandala pati shrining sada tuchavat. Like all the six Goswamis, they left opulent situations, considering aristocracy, money and all this thing to be insignificant. They're all highly austere. But among them, Raghunath Das Goswami especially was so austere. That's described how he first successfully escaped from Bengal and came to Puri. At first he was accepting money from his father, then he didn't accept, then he was accepting food given by others at the gate of the Jagannath temple, then again he was begging from different shopkeepers, then he went and took the thrown out rice prasad, which was smelling apparently rotten, that even the cows wouldn't eat it. That's got to be pretty far gone, isn't it? Can you imagine if you throw out rice that the cows won't eat it? That is what he was eating every day. Then later he went to Vrindavan with the idea of After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left this world, he thought, well, there's no point for me to stay here anymore. So he went to Vrindavan with the idea of committing suicide by jumping off the top of Govardhan Hill, which Prabhupada comments is a Vaishnav system of committing suicide. But then we're not allowed to go on top of Govardhan Hill, so no way to do it. We can commit civil suicide by giving up our attachment to this material world. That's the best. Best way to commit suicide. Only way. Don't try any other way. So then, when he was living in Vrindavan, he used to take a little bit of buttermilk in his hand, two or three drops, every day or so. And when he took it, he would chastise himself that, oh, this is so much sense gratification. It's difficult to imagine. He was so much renounced from this material world. And then also among Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers, there was Rai Ramananda, who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he met him and first of all in South India at Kovur on the banks of the Godavari. And Ramananda Rai was like a king, practically. He was the governor of the southern provinces under the control of Maharaj Prataparudra. So he was practically of kingly status. So he came to take bath in the Godavari, coming in a palanquin and being feted by brahmanas. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as a sannyasi, embraced him, which surprised all the brahmanas present. And then after they had their celebrated discussions, which introduce us to the zenith of all philosophy in the world, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu proposed that Rai Ramananda go to live in Puri so they can live together and they can discuss throughout their lives together. So Ramananda Rai went to Puri and actually went to Cuttack, the capital at that time of Utkal, modern Orissa, and proposed to Maharaj Prataparudra that now I'm giving up my service, so please release me. So it was quite different to Rupa and Sanatan when they left the service of the Nawab Hussein Shah to join. They wanted to leave to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but the Nawab didn't want to let them go, and they had to escape by various tricky means. Rupa got away fairly easily, but for Sanatan it was more difficult. But when Prataparudra Maharaj was told by Rai Ramananda, I'm not going to do your service anymore, I'm just going to be with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was very happy. He said, very good, you are very lucky. Wish I could do the same. So he gave him full payment, the kingly payment for doing nothing for him directly, but just for being with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was living in kingly opulence. And that incident is described when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent his uncle, Pradyumna Mishra, who came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saying, please tell me something about Krishna. And I don't know. Whatever I know, I learned from Rai Ramananda, so better you go and see him. So Pradyumna Mishra found Ramananda Rai. He came to his house and Rai Ramananda came late, said, sorry, no one told me you were here, but I was busy dressing and bathing young girls and teaching them how to dance. So Pradyumna Mishra was surprised. We don't expect devotees to be, I mean, we don't expect them to do this. I mean, we don't expect them even to be materialistic in any way. What to speak of bathing young girls with your own hands? Mahaprabhu bhaktagon vairagya pradhan jaha dekhi pritahan gaura bhagavan. It's expected that devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they will exhibit great vairagya or detachment from this material world. That is a principal symptom of them. Seeing which, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is very satisfied. But Rai Ramananda was apparently a materialist by his income and his mode of life, and not only that, but appeared to be an immoral materialist. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Pradyumna Mishra came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and expressed that, you asked me to hear from him, I mean, he's not even a moral person, what to speak of a devotee. He didn't say this, but he indirectly expressed this. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that, you don't understand. Everything he does, everything Rai Ramananda does is simply for the pleasure of the Lord. So he's bathing these girls. No thought of personal enjoyment can possibly enter his mind. He's simply bathing them and teaching them how to dance because he wants that Lord Jagannath will be satisfied. It's not possible for others. It's only possible for him. So once Srila Prabhupada, in his Purvashram, his Grihastha life, he asked Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur about this. He said that, well, we see in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that devotees like Raghunath Das, they were extremely renounced. And Rai Ramananda and some others, they were living in great opulence. So why is that? How is that? And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur replied that there's no difference in their advancement. It's not that Rai Ramananda is attached to material opulence, nor even that Raghunath Das is attached to giving up material opulence. That's also another phase of Maya, to be attached to being austere. But rather, a devotee accepts whatever is favorable for his service to the Lord and whatever is ordained for his service to the Lord. Satsarupa Maharaj, in his biography of Srila Prabhupada, noted that at one point he was describing how Prabhupada, after having struggled so much to come to the West, it was very difficult for him to come to the West in so many ways. No one wanted to give him, everyone was discouraging him, although nowadays you'll find, I've met maybe at least 12 or 15 people who told me that, I was the one who told your Guru Maharaj, I was the one who suggested he go to the West. Although we only know from Prabhupada himself that the only one who encouraged him was his own Guru Maharaj. And others discouraged him. This is the version we get from Prabhupada himself. Nowadays there are many people ready to claim the credit. So people were discouraging him. No one wanted to give him the passage to go. It's very difficult. Even he got the passage given by Sumati Murarji, and then to get the paperwork required to go, then he went to America. On the way he had heart attacks. He came to America, he landed, he went to Butler in Pennsylvania, and then came to New York, and then he was wandering the streets of New York. And at this point it appeared that no one was ready to listen to his message. This such an important message, which no one in America, or no one practically in India even at that time, had an understanding. What is the importance of this message and to preach it throughout the world? So Prabhupada was wandering alone in New York, and it appeared that no one was going to listen to him. He was just unnoticed, just one of 10 million or so people in New York, and among the 10 million, any one person in New York, the other 9,999,999 don't give a damn for them. That's New York. Or the material world in general, but more so there. No one cares for anyone else. So he was alone, and no one cared for him, and no one noticed him, and it appeared that he was just an insignificant figure on the streets of New York, and who cares? But Satsarupa Maharaj noted that even if the Krishna consciousness movement had not developed from that point, even if Prabhupada's attempt to preach Krishna consciousness all over the world had come to nothing, that still Prabhupada's attempt was completely perfect and completely successful. And it's not that Prabhupada, he became greater or better because his movement was successful. Because his endeavor from the very beginning was simply to please his Guru Maharaj. Please don't, Hare Krishna, this young boy, please don't sit on Prabhupada's Vyasasana. That's meant for you to worship, not to lean on. So he was completely perfect and he's completely successful also because his endeavor, his full endeavor, Krishnarte Akila Cheshtitam, his whole endeavor was simply to please Krishna and more specifically to please his Guru Maharaj. So his life was completely successful and perfect, and that success from we see, if there are many people coming and so many developments, we see that that is success. But the real success is always to remember Krishna. And one who's always remembering Krishna and thinking how to serve Krishna in to the best of his ability, then in many cases Krishna reciprocates by, if one has a strong desire to preach Krishna consciousness, then Krishna may reciprocate by sending so many facilities for doing so. But Prabhupada was perfect even before. So in the same way, Devahuti, she's now about to be served by many maidservants and live in opulence. But her inner consciousness before and after didn't change. Her consciousness was how to please her husband, she wanted to please him because he was a great person, a great devotee of Krishna. So, in the same way, a devotee, his consciousness doesn't change. Prabhupada, again the example of Prabhupada, best example, that Prabhupada was, to a large extent, an unknown and unrecognized sadhu. Then he became the head of a worldwide movement, but he wasn't affected by that. It wasn't that he became proud or that he became desirous to enjoy. It's described in Prabhupada's childhood, himself and his father, they would go every evening to hear Harikatha being spoken in different parts of Calcutta. They would walk for long distances to save the tram fare. So that's a very frugal background Prabhupada came from. Then later on in life, he was flying all over the world in first class with assistants. But his motivation wasn't changed. It wasn't that Prabhupada wanted to show off that I'm such a big person. This is a big game of materialistic people that they like. Materialistic people in India, probably more than in any other country of the world, people are very much interested in prestige and showing off. I'm very important, I've got lots of money, I'm highly qualified, I know so many important people. In many ways, Indian people, although pious, they're maybe in another way the most materialistic people in the world. You're traveling all over the world. You see people in any other country are so, the whole country is all geared up to, everyone should be a success and make progress. And it seems to me in India more than any other place, people are very ambitious, very materially ambitious. Many of them are pious at the same time, but very materially ambitious. But Prabhupada was never materially ambitious. He was spiritually ambitious. Let me try to serve the mission of my Guru Maharaj in the best possible way. Let us use all this materialistic advancement by Ajagara Nyai, the principle of the python. He doesn't do any work himself. He sits in one place, he sits on a tree, and when some animal goes underneath, he just drops down and catches it. He doesn't go hunting. Just drops down on top and squeezes the animal and eats it. So Prabhupada used this example. One morning they were walking, early morning walk in a park, I think it was maybe Denver or somewhere in America. And the devotees with Prabhupada noticed there's such a nice park, but the kamis, they're not coming here. They went to so much endeavor to make it nice, but most of the time they're all busy working, earning money to pay their taxes, which will be used for such things, for instance, as building this park, but making this park and keeping it nice. But we don't go to work, but we're just enjoying the park. And Prabhupada says, this is, he gave the example, just like the python. He doesn't do any work, but just when there's the opportunity, he takes advantage. So the materialistic people, they're developing so much technology, and Prabhupada, while condemning the endeavor to materially, to think that material advancement is all in all, at the same time, Prabhupada, seeing the situation in the material world and wanting to preach Krishna consciousness, he took advantage of all this technology to preach Krishna consciousness, using the example of the handle of the axe. The handle of the axe is made from wood, and it's used for chopping wood. So you take, like this, Prabhupada took the modern technology and used it to preach that technological advancement is just another phase of Maya, and better we live simply and chant Hare Krishna. But Prabhupada was never enamored by all of this. Only he saw that if we're to preach in the modern world, then we have to go with the flow of the modern world to some extent. That doesn't mean compromising our principles. Sometimes I see even devotees who've read Prabhupada books a lot and they're dedicated to Prabhupada, they often have a serious misunderstanding about Yukta Vairagya. If, for instance, I point out to them that the modern psychology, which certain or many members of our movement are at the present time enamored by, not in India, because I don't know, not so advanced in foolishness in some ways, in other ways, but in the Western world, people are very much enamored by psychology, modern psychology. So many of our devotees are also enamored by this. And they say, well, Yukta Vairagya, it's just like using a computer. But it's not just like using a computer, because using a computer, it doesn't have a philosophy of life attached to it. It doesn't analyze the mind and the consciousness and how to adjust it, which is the whole business of Krishna consciousness, Savayamana Krishna Padara Vindayo, that one's mind is to be fixed on Krishna and withdrawn from the sense objects. And there's a whole philosophy of how to do that. Within the Vedic culture, there are various doctrines about, most of which recommend controlling the senses and controlling the mind. But that has to be done in a very specific way. If it's done in a different way, one gets a different result. Just like the Mayavadis, they also follow processes for controlling the mind and senses. But they don't go to Krishna. They can only go as far as the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, because their goal and the sadhya and sadhana are highly interlinked. The goal of life and how to attain it are highly interlinked. That's why devotees and Mayavadis also, they both follow processes for controlling the mind and the senses. And in many ways, there may be many similarities between Mayavadis and devotees. There are, on some levels, many similarities. Prabhupada said that even philosophically, up to the point of liberation, devotees and Mayavadis, they have the same philosophy. This material world is miserable. We are eternal spirit soul. Everything here is temporary and illusory. You have to get out of it. So, but the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, if we don't understand it exactly, that means that we'll misunderstand it. And It may be a tangential difference, but a tangent doesn't arrive at the same point as the original line. So we end up somewhere else. Instead of going to Krishna, we end up somewhere else in the material world. So adopting the techniques of mundane psychology means that we're associating with mundaners in a very intimate way. We're associating with their values and their mindset, and we're not giving credence to Krishna consciousness being itself the not only the best but the only real process for properly controlling the mind and senses. So going to mundane psychologists is in itself lack of application of Krishna consciousness. So it's not yukta vairagya. One part of yukta vairagya is we should know what the limits of that are, how to apply it. So there's so much counseling going on, everyone should be counseled and this and that, and I have this mental problem and that mental problem. But the real thing to do is everyone should just follow the process given by Prabhupada, and then you won't have all these mental problems. We're trying to sort out, my father beat me in my childhood and all this. But the real thing we should do is hear and chant about Krishna. This is the real medicine. Shravana kirtana karo anukana ashata pachala chari kahe premananda manusha janama shafala karana bari. We should go on hearing and chanting incessantly. We don't have time for anything, all this, so many different rubbish ideas. We should make our human life successful by the process of Krishna consciousness. And when someone will say, well, someone's not, you know, they're so mentally disturbed, they can't do, but anyone in any condition of life, they can take up the chanting of Krishna consciousness. This is what we really need to do. If we say mundane psychology, then we're always trying to think about me and my mind. But if we take up Krishna consciousness, the process of Krishna consciousness is to stop thinking about ourselves and to think about Krishna, which is the lack of thinking about Krishna is the cause of all our material attachments, which is the cause of all our problems. So, of course, if someone is seriously mentally disturbed to the point of being crazy, then they may require some psychiatric treatment that might help them. You never know. But the general process, or the process given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Prabhu kahi kahilam e maha mantra eha japa giya shabe kariye nibandha. He said, everyone, shabe, should follow this process. Eha hoite sarva shiddhi hoibe shobha. By this process, everyone can achieve perfection. So this is actual nirvisheshvad. This is the positive nirvisheshvad. Nirvishesh, this word means without distinction, or another meaning is without discrimination. So the positive Nirvisheshvad is without discriminating. Patra pacha bicha nahe nahe stana stan jai jaha pai tahe deya prem dan. Without discriminating, this person is qualified, this person is not qualified. Krishna consciousness can be taken up by anyone, so it should be distributed to everyone. So Devahuti is going through a different phase of life now. She's about to come out from a life of great austerity to a life of great opulence, but her inner intention is only to serve her husband, by doing which she is blessed with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, taking birth as her son. Nowadays, if we speak that wives should serve their husband, they might put us in prison for discrimination against women or some such thing, but this is the Vedic process. The media in India is very eagerly destroying this wonderful culture, which has gone on for so many thousands of years. And in ISKCON, we often find it also convenient to go along with the culture that, well, doesn't matter. You eat, sleep, mate and defend, and have divorce and get married 6 or 7 times, but you chant Hare Krishna also. But this is nonsense. One has to be a human. One has to have human-like consciousness, actually spiritual consciousness, but if we're living like cats and dogs, then there's no question of developing higher consciousness. So these examples are given in the Bhagavatam. Devahuti, her husband, left after Kada Muni left her for the higher spiritual purpose after the birth of Kapila Dev. But we don't hear about her taking some more boyfriends, going around the rishis in the forest, and we don't hear any such thing. There's no question of any such thing. So there are so many things to be learned from Bhagavatam. This is an important point. Nowadays in our movement there's lots of discussion of higher topics, intimate topics, the gopis and this and that, and at the same time not much emphasis on how to live as a human being. How it's just considered normal to get divorced 3 or 4 times and discuss Rasleela. This is called Sahajyaism. It's not what Srila Prabhupada came to teach us. Just as a side point, I thought I'd make that point. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments about this? You just came in last night? From America? Reunion Island. Oh, you're preaching there in French. Did you see that? There was just Nitai Gaurasundar in Paris. You saw that on the BDS? You translated that? Oh, right, yeah, okay, yeah. Looks like something's going on there. There's another island out there, New Caledonian Island or something, French-speaking. There's a devotee, he's been in Sydney Temple for years and years, Lakshman. He's from there. You could contact him. Seems like these islanders are good prospects for Krishna consciousness. Bhadranarayan Prabhu was also telling about, he was selling paintings or something door-to-door, and he was in some Pacific island somewhere. These islands, they're like 1,000 kilometers from any other island, and maybe 2,000 kilometers from any continent. So he was selling paintings there, and he had one picture of Krishna. People said, "That's him." They were completely remote situation, but they had Prabhupada's Gita and they wanted to know about Krishna. So this distribution of books in the airports especially, I guess the books go everywhere. It's very powerful, this distribution of Prabhupada's books.
He refused, in the context of ISKCON today, we are taught to accept wealth from
an engagement. We accept wealth for the service of Krishna, yeah.
So, Raghunandan,
not taught to, but we may do. It's not compulsory. We don't say when someone joins the movement that you should accept millions of dollars. This is your main purpose of life. But it may be in the course of our service. Or it may be that one will live as a simple brahmachari and never have any money come to him at all. Sometimes we find that Brahmacharis become very enthusiastic to go on to house programs where they know that they're going to get some dakshina. They become more enthusiastic. Yes, let's go. We want to go preaching. So, that's not yukta vairagya. That's material attachment. We have to be very careful to see the difference. Yeah, what's your question? He could have used... Yeah, that's a good question. Why didn't Raghunath Das Goswami accept his father's money?
And later he accepted money
Later on he accepted money for renovating Radha Kund. I don't know if he personally accepted it, but... There are different points here. One point is that Raghunath Das Goswami was showing how a devotee is detached from this material world. Now, it's not that Ramananda... Yes, this... It's not that Ramananda Rai was any less detached than Raghunath Das Goswami. But they had different... they were demonstrating to the world different features of advancement in Krishna consciousness. Ramananda Rai demonstrated how a devotee completely conquers lust. Now it wasn't that Ramananda Rai was completely conquered over lust and Raghunath Das Goswami had some little lust in his heart. There was no such thing. But Ramananda Rai, for the sake of teaching others, by his behavior demonstrated that. And Raghunath Das, it wasn't that Ramananda Rai was attached to material opulence or even that Raghunath Das Goswami was detached from it, but he demonstrated that. It's like an extreme demonstration for the benefit of people who otherwise can't understand unless it's demonstrated to them. Another point is that Raghunath Das Goswami was not engaged as a preacher directly. So there was no... Wealth can be used in the service of the Lord if one is preaching or building temples, but he wasn't doing that. So one may accept for oneself, one should not accept for oneself anything, but one may accept any amount of opulence for the service of the Lord. And there are so many points to be understood. He was also showing how after accepting the renounced life, one should not remain attached to one's family members. So there's so many points to be understood from this. Anything else? Yeah, being attached to austerity is not good. One should be attached to pleasing Krishna. So if one... Just like to give an example. Shastra states that one who eats on Janmashtami, it's like eating vulture's flesh and various things like that. It's not, it's wrong. It's very bad, it's very sinful. But Shastra also states that Guru Vachan, if one has a bona fide guru and the guru gives some order which apparently contradicts that of Shastra, then Guru Vachan overrides that of normal Shastra Vidhi. So once on Janmashtami day, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur decided that right after Janmashtami, I want to go to Mathura and have some program there. So right on Janmashtami day, he told one of his disciples, go, right away now. Get on the train and go to Mathura and arrange everything. They were in Calcutta side. And he told him, before you go, take a full meal. And he didn't want to do. Janmashtami, how can I? He said, you take, because when you get there, there's not much time. You have to immediately do your service. So for that, if you're all weak and you, then you won't be able to do properly. So take and go. So he took a meal and went. So if he had been more attached to austerity, that I have to follow this austerity, then he may have overridden his Guru Maharaj's order. He may have said, well, no, I'll go, I'll do my service, fasting. But then if he couldn't do the service so well because he was attached to the austerity, then the service of Krishna would have been less. So devotees accept austerities, and austerities may also be accepted to help detach us from the spirit of enjoyment, because it's like we say, yes, we're accepting nice food so that we can serve nicely, but it may also be that we're attached to the nice flavors and everything. So it might be, for instance, that in Kartik or any other, specifically in Kartik, devotees, they accept more austerities. One, at least during this month, one might, it's not compulsory, but one might accept certain austerities so that one becomes detached from the jiva lalasa, the pushings of the tongue. So that's an example. Hare Krishna.